At Emory University, we are guided by a shared purpose and a spirit of collaboration. Students here push each other to think creatively and work together because we believe different perspectives lead to new ideas. We know that Emory's mission to create, preserve, teach, and apply knowledge in the service of humanity takes all of us. We do together better. Learn more at emory.edu.
Shop the Sherwin-Williams July Summer Sale and get 30% off paints and stains July 18th through the 28th. With prices starting at $34.29, it's the perfect time to transform your space with color. Whether you're looking to revamp your interior or exterior, we have you covered with bold hues, soothing neutrals, and everything in between. Visit your neighborhood Sherwin-Williams store or shop the sale online. Delivery available on qualifying orders. Click the banner to learn more. Retail sales only. Some exclusions apply. See store for details.
This is Hidden Killers Week in Review.
A look back at the most prolific stories of the week.
This is Hidden Killers with Tony Bruschi.
Brian Koberger. There's, a lot happening since Judge Hippler said, you know, we got to be a little more transparent. And transparent certainly is what we're seeing a lot more of these days. As the developments continue on, it makes you raise your eyebrows, literally, between the Amazon trail, the criminology case essay that reads kind of like a how-to guide, and the mysterious disappearance of his phone at just the right moment. Prosecutors are laying out what they claim is a carefully calculated plan. But how much of this sticks in a courtroom? Sounds good on paper, sounds good on the internet, but how is it going to read to a jury, and how much is just a really bad coincidence, which I'm going to guess that's going to be the next argument. Joining us is defense attorney and former prosecutor Eric Faddis. Eric, when prosecutors say this wasn't just a murder, but a methodical act of forensic evasion, DNA scrubbed, cars cleaned, license plates swapped, and trash ditched at 4 a.m., you know, in little baggies with rubber gloves, because that's normal. How do you begin to kind of push back on this as a defense? I mean, is that a red flag, and can it still be explained away, these sort of things?
You know, sometimes in a case like this, the defense looks at it and says, hey, my guy couldn't have done this. He's not some mastermind criminal. He's not smart enough to pull this off, that kind of thing. But with Koberger, he was a PhD student in criminology. And so if there's anybody who knows how to methodically go about trying to commit a crime and then covering it up and get away with it, gosh, a PhD student in criminology would be a pretty good candidate for that. And so that is certainly not a defense that his side is going to be able to put forth.
Especially when you're writing a paper about it and it doesn't look that good. I mean, nobody has, I guess, seen the whole thing. We've seen little excerpts of it, but I'm curious to see what that paper looks like if it comes out, when it comes out. We obviously have seen his questions that were put out on the DeSales website, you know, when he was studying, and those have since been taken down, asking criminals to basically tell me how you were feeling as you were committing said crime. And on the surface, if you're studying criminology, it makes sense. But in the context of, oh, look what he's accused of doing, that gives it a whole other light. Could that just be a coincidence, though? He was studying criminology, even though he seems like he's researching very deeply how to even feel about committing a crime like this.
Yes, some peculiar developments from Koberger's past that on the surface, some say could, you know, tie him to exactly what these allegations say he did. Now, on the other hand, there is sort of a trend in the law, depends on the jurisdiction, but against using extrinsic types of statements, and especially we look at rap lyrics. You know, a lot of rappers would say, hey, look, I was just saying that because it's part of the song and I'm trying to sell records, whatever. Koberger could use that principle and say, hey, look, I was simply doing my classwork, and this shouldn't be held against me in a murder case. That would be unfair. And some judges are open to that idea.
Didn't Koberger, correct me if I'm wrong, but I mean, there's so many facets. Didn't he try to like make a rap song at one point in time? Wasn't that out? Do you remember? Like, I think this is a thing. I think it was like years ago that he attempted that. I got to look into that. But I think like early on, yeah, when people were looking into this and kind of digging up everything, like with the blogging and I think that might have been one of those things. That'd be an interesting. It's all a rap lyric. It's all like he got the mask. He got the knife sheath. He shot a music video. Here's the music video. And it just happens to be shot in front of King Road. I'm making that up. The fact that we have more on the Amazon receipts now, he bought the knife or the exact type of knife with the sheath, with the sharpener, quite a ways back prior to the murders, about 6 months roughly. But now we have receipts that are out there that shows he also bought a mask that happens to look exactly like what one of the surviving roommates saw. You know, buying those items individually, not a crime by any means, but contextually, is this showing premeditation, considering how far back some of these purchases were to the crime?
That's exactly what the prosecutors are going to look at, because to prove first-degree murder, you have to prove premeditation. You have to prove that he deliberated about this, thought about it one way or the other, and said, no, I'm going to go ahead and stab these four people. That also he had malice aforethought. That all means that the prosecution has to prove planning. And when we're talking about allegedly procuring supplies that are going to be necessary to carry out a quadruple stabbing, namely a knife and the sheath, and then those things are found, or the sheath is found at the scene. And then when you add in elements to try to cover your tracks and not be identified, like a mask, all of these things start to have a cumulative effect, which makes it look like the walls are closing in on Coburn.
Yeah, well, another wall that's closing in is also his, I like to go look at the stars alibi, now that we've learned there were no stars that night. It was actually very cloudy, very low cloud base as well, so it was foggy on the ground as well. So he's out there looking at the stars. Why didn't Ann Taylor at least go back and check the 7-day forecast just to see what's going on? I mean, it's not hard to look back and find that sort of information before you say he's looking at the stars. Or was it more of a figurative way of speaking, which I'm sure will be what's argued.
Yeah, certainly. And, you know, but defense, especially in a high profile case, and the prosecution as well, both sides have to realize that representations they make that become public are going to be scrutinized. They're going to be picked apart. People are going to be looking for holes or support or corroboration or lack thereof. And so this seems like a significant oversight and an error, because, you know, that would be an easy thing to kind of shore up and establish. You know, of course, she could argue it was metaphorical. She could argue that in this specific stretch of the road, there actually wasn't much fog or whatever. But it doesn't look good.
No, it's not a good look. And as we're also learning, more and more surveillance footage is out there. Some Ring doorbell cameras, as more things continue to be unsealed. Surveillance footage showing his car in the area right before the murders. Several different, you know, and the argument from the pro-burgers is it's a white car. They had it wrong at the beginning. It was the wrong year of Elantra. It's like, yeah, it's not a great shot, but when you put it in context with multiple camera shots and you go, okay, this pretty much looks like the car. And then he changed his plate shortly thereafter. That's not a good look either, when the vehicle that looks like yours is right there in the crime scene and then you turn your phone off.
Totally that. And then the changing of plates thing is going to be argued as consciousness of guilt.
Yep.
Like, that's something that criminals do when they're trying to get away with crimes. I'm not aware of any alternative innocent explanation for changing the plates. Maybe there is one. Maybe the defense is looking into that. I don't know. But they should probably look for that, because without some innocent possible explanation, it really makes it look like it's a guy who's trying to get away with murder.
Yeah, it certainly does. And it makes you wonder a little bit too, because they're trying to throw in the autism argument. And again, it's a scale. So you can be, you know, staring at the wall, or you can be insanely productive and a genius, just depending where you're at. And a lot of times you're kind of socially awkward. You do things a little bit different than most. And even, you know, in a highly functional way, it can be coming across as, well, that's a weird way of doing things. Do you think that that's part of the reason why they're trying to throw the autism argument in there? Not to say, well, I mean, they've already had one trying to say that they couldn't, or he couldn't physically have done it because of some other condition. But I actually think it's not a horrible argument of, look, this guy is really awkward. He's autistic. He's always, you know, been a little bit out there, not a murderer, but just, you know, he does things different. And some people could look at it as suspicious or weird. And that's all it is. It's just all these weird coincidences of him, you know, throwing out trash at 4 a.m. and cleaning his car like that, changing the plates, looking really freaked out when the police pull him over twice in a row. I mean, there's a lot of things one could say. Well, you know, if anyone in this sort of, you know, mindset or has this, has autism on the level where he's at, would be acting kind of awkward. Is that where you think they may go, considering the stars don't seem to be a very strong argument at this point?
I think that that would be a smart move, because look, as defense, you have these set of circumstances the prosecution is bringing, and they're going to try to show how they're suspicious and unusual and something we wouldn't expect, that kind of thing. And so for defense, to look at it, if this gentleman does actually have autism, that would be a potential explanation for peculiarities, for, you know, the jury might think, oh, why would an innocent person do that? That doesn't make sense. Oh, it's because perhaps he thinks differently. Perhaps he acts differently, digests information differently, that sort of thing. So I think it could potentially neutralize some of the, you know, unusual aspects of the evidence that the prosecution is going to bring forward. And that could land with some jurors, especially those folks who might know people or have people in their family with autism. Mm-hmm.
The fact is, though, it'd be a lot of coincidences. I mean, like a ridiculous amount of coincidences for the behavior that we've seen to think, oh, this guy's not a murderer. that's, you know, it's like you're doing all the things that add up to having, you know, been this guy.
Want more on this case and others? Then press subscribe now and don't miss a moment of true crime coverage from Tony Brewski and the Hidden Killers podcast.